Nice to be here, actually. Nice to be well enough to be here. Yana is... when she gets a cold, like anything else in her life, it's a serious matter, and it goes through and it affects all sorts of things, but not in a positive way, usually. So it's a kind of longer experience for her to get through.
She puts 100% into it.
And it puts 100% into her as well. So she's feeling better, but it sort of goes up and down, and then Jeremy gets it, and then Bara gets it, and then Yana gets it again. You know, it's stupid. Anyway, thank you for your prayers. Really. It does make all the difference, and we can feel in our family when, you know, the church is praying and things are changing, which is really good. So I'm going to start off with a bit of a strange thing. Still strange for me, because I don't usually get dreams, but back in the summer, about 6 months ago or so, I had this strange dream, which I still remember, and I don't believe I've got the full spiritual meaning of it yet, but I'll share it with you. So there was Andy with his lovely
dream or nightmare.
Still the nightmare. You see, we're already getting to cloudy waters, right? So there was Andy with his nice Jeep and trailer and so on, you know, and in this dream he came up to me and gave me the keys and he said, "Alan, there you are. Here's my Jeep." And I was just amazed. I said, "Wow, that's brilliant, you know. I never really thought about it, but yeah, that would be nice." And so off I was driving around roads and so on, and it was all very good. And then some days later, there was suddenly this clunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, the dream quickly disappears, right? What's gone wrong? Something's fallen out, the wheel's fallen off, or something like that. There's David, who suddenly appears, you know, and he says, "Oh, it's going to be it's going to be something crazy, and are you going to be able to fix it, Alan?" And I said to myself, "Actually, no." And in the dream, I just gave the Jeep back. So, you know, as you can see, there's some powerful spiritual significance in there somewhere. But anyway, I will attempt from that, just the thing that God gave me tonight, to sort of somehow relate that as well. I was looking in Psalm 34 in the last few days, and it's a really favourite psalm of mine, where David, you know, he pretended madness before this king who was going to kill him, but drove him away because he thought he was crazy, and David was so happy that he managed to get out of it, that God had totally, you know, miraculously saved his life. And it's all about the happiness of those who trust in God. Amazing stuff in there. And I often read it, especially if I'm down. It's just really good to see this excitement and joy in this psalm. But it talks specifically about, you know, "Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who trusts in him. Fear the Lord, you his saints. There's no want to those who fear him." And really touched me, this whole idea of fear, you know, of what is it to fear the Lord in our lives. And it's something, you know, the definition you've probably heard before about the fact that it's not actually being terrified of God as you might of some nightmare, but it's actually putting him first and that sort of thing. But I think it's something that David and many people who God loved and God trusted, and that was their way of life, you know, this fear of God. So I was beginning to sort of think along this, and I was beginning to think, well, who else had, you know, who else did God see that way and use? And immediately came to mind Noah. And in Genesis 6, there's this story about Noah, and all it says just before the flood happens and all of this, all it says about Noah is that he was the son of Lamech. He had three sons. Okay, fair enough. Then it talks about the wickedness of the earth, and then the Lord, you know, God says, this is enough. You know, I hate this wickedness. I'll destroy everything on the earth. And then it says in verse 8, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. You know, and immediately after that, God starts talking to Noah. And there's this, you know, it's not like Noah was an amazing priest, according to this. You know, it's not that he was amazingly knowledgeable and studied and everything like that. He just simply, he pleased God. He found grace in the eyes of the Lord. It says Noah walked with God in verse 9. And I think, you know, walking with God and fearing God, it all sort of comes to the same point where you are, in a sense, you're scared enough of not being with God to want to be with God, right? You're scared, you actually are deliberately aware of the fact that if you're without God, it could go bad. It will be worse. And yet, I know from my life that it's really easy for me to skip that, right? And just to find my normal pattern of living day by day. You know, there are so many comforts we have now, so many ways of thinking and technology and so on that just make it easy to actually live without God in this sense. And yet this fear of God is, as I say, knowing that God's way is better and deliberately trying to say, no, I'm not going to live, you know, I'm not going to live the sort of default way, the standard way. I'm actually going to seek out God because I'm scared of not doing so. So thinking about this, you know, about Noah and that sort of thing, when I was looking at this and I read through the story about Noah, it talks about Noah's deliverance. You know, it talks about the great flood in chapter 7. It talks about Noah's deliverance in chapter 8, God's covenant with creation. You know, I think it's a story that many of us have read many times. But interestingly, in chapter 10, it talks about nations descended from Noah after, you know, after the flood recedes. And then in chapter 11, there's the Tower of Babel. Okay, so very soon after this flood, you know, after God finds this righteous man, this person who pleases him, who goes after him, who's scared of being away from him, you get the situation of the Tower of Babel, where it says, now the whole earth, which is actually Noah's descendants, right? It's only a few generations from Noah, so it's Noah's sons, and so on. Now the whole earth had one language and one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Then they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, come, let us build ourselves a city, and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. When God told Noah what to do, Noah and his sons, he had three sons, they worked in unity together. Noah, as I say, he wasn't a priest, he didn't have loads of knowledge, particularly just use what he had. And we see the films, I haven't seen all of them, but the films where you watch the ark being built, he's following instructions. He's just doing what he can, and his sons are helping him. And there's a complete miracle. You know, the earth changes. The history of the earth changes just because of that. Here in the Tower of Babel, the same kind of thing happens, except God is excluded from it. All right, all the people come together. They all get this really wonderful idea, logical idea. Let's create the greatest city ever. This is where we can dwell. We can control the whole earth. You know, this is going to be a great thing. We've got this cool stone and mortar and so on. Let's make a name for ourselves in case we're scattered abroad. I mean, it's logical human thinking, really. God comes down and says, I can't allow this. I'm going to have to do something about this, and you know, changes all their languages so they can't communicate. But it's crazy, the parallel there. You know, they're working in unity. So was Noah and his sons, and yet he was using simply what God had given him after knowing what God had told him to do. They were using what the knowledge and the skills they'd got, they came together, but just based on their own plans and their own logical thinking, right? This is the way forward. This is how we're going to make our names great. We're going to change the earth this way. I don't think Noah, when he did what he did, had any idea what the impact would be on history. He was just doing an embarrassing thing in front of lots of other people. And you know, it's amazing that he did that. Amazing that he was ready to do that, build a ship probably in the middle of a plain or whatever, and everyone laughing at him, he went for it and he did that because he knew it was the right thing to do. It wasn't logical, he did it. And the main focus of what I want to say today is that in both cases, God gave them skills. God has given us skills and talents and passions. There are things that we're really crazy about, whether meaningful or not, hobbies that we have. God puts these things in our lives for a purpose, but they can be used either just for us or they can be used, you know, for Him. And it's so easy for me in my life to take the stuff that I've been given and just use it for what I think is the logical, sensible way. This is how I make a name for myself. This is how I influence my surroundings, you know, with my skills. But God can take the stupidest thing that you've got, like an interest in... Oh, I have to be careful, don't I, when I say something like that. Like an interest in model railways. There you go. See, now it comes back to me. An interest in something really crazy, you know, small, weird, perhaps. And yet when you say, Lord, you've given me this, I don't know why, what do I do with it? When you go to Him and He says, right, do this, and it might be the tiniest thing, it can change. It can change so much despite it being such a weird little thing in your life. Something that you, for some reason, have loved all those years, or can do all those years, or have practiced all those years, and you don't know why. And yet, bang, it can change a whole situation. And I'm having to take some of these things seriously. Like, and I see other people doing the same. I'm amazed by the example, or really inspired by the example of Roy. You know, Roy's gone through a load of stuff through his life, and now, you know, at the point where he is, he's decided guitar. You know, guitar is the thing I really want to take up and study and give this to God. And he's really, really committed, and he's, you know, despite being ill and the stuff he's going through, he still wants to attend practices, he still wants to get better and better. That's amazing, and I believe that God has put that in his heart, and God's going to use that. You know, maybe it's an area or a thing that would seem to us insignificant, and yet it could change a whole spiritual dimension in someone's life at some point. my wife, Yana, of course, she's not here, but I will still speak very positively about her, because I'm sure she would hear about it anyway. So, yeah, there you go.
She's asked about it.
She knows. She's getting into painting now, something that she's never been able to do. But oil painting was already always that little love that she always had wanted to get into, and always pushed it aside. No, you know, it's not going to make money for us. It's not going to, I don't have time for it, and that sort of thing. She sought God about it in the last year or two, and suddenly, bam, God said, right, I want you to go for oil painting and get better at that. And she's taken that seriously, and now she's using, you know, whatever time she can when there's daylight to be able to paint. Fills up the kitchen, I can't make coffees, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of, like, little niggles, right? But, sorry, it's true, yeah. But you know, that's what we're committed to, because that's what God has called into her life for this point. In addition to worship, of course, which is another big part for her. But there can, you know, this is what I sensed from this, is that God, he's only got to say the word at the right time, and the funniest, tiniest little seed in your life can suddenly have a whole new harvest, a whole new significance. The reason that it was brought, that it was put in there a long time ago, suddenly has new meaning. It shows its purpose. And yet, on the other hand, you know, stuff for me, like if I'm pushing my knowledge in, I don't know, computing or something like that, and thinking I can change the world. You know, if I come up with an amazing idea, it's going to change a new startup. It's going to, you know, it's going to be a new Facebook and all this kind of stuff. If that's not something that God has actually called me to do, you know, then I'm actually going to lose all my energy and resources and everything chasing something that in the end God's just going to say, I've got to stop him. He's, you know, he's in unity. He's got all the right stuff there, but he's not going the right way. That's not actually what I wanted him to do. And I have to watch out for that, because I have all these ideas, you know. But if that's not something that God specifically told me to follow and do, it's not going to bear the fruit that we need. So that's the main sort of focus, I guess, of what I believe God was speaking to me about. And the final thing here, just related to that, which I thought was really good, I'm sort of following a Bible study from Darlene Zech. I never know how to pronounce her name. Zech. Anyway, the lady who's the worship leader from Hillsongs in Australia. And just in the very first one that I read, that I looked at, you know, instead of going off on some massively spiritual sort of thing and doing an amazing bang, you know, she's really, really practical. And she says, you know, balance in your life is so important. And she said, you know, I need God time, I need family time, I need thinking time, and I need creative time. She splits up her needs into those four areas. God time, family time, thinking time, creative time. And she said, if I get weary and if I get depressed, then I know that one of these areas is lacking. It could be the God time, it could be the family time, it could also be the creative time, not getting enough just to be able to create and use what God's given you. Not enough just to think things through. You know, this, you just don't have time to stop and think. And she says, you know, I need that balance. And I do as well. I recognize that. But it's all of those are important, not just spiritual, not just family. So I just throw that in because that really blessed me. And I think it's related to this, because it's so easy to fill our lives with so much stuff that's not actually going to produce what God is really God's best basically, and it's a bit like the Babel sort of thing where, you know, theoretically, logically, we can see wonderful things happening, but it's not actually what God told us to do. Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
That's it. Thank you. Why don't you just spend a couple of minutes, guys, thinking through what is it that struck you out of what Alan had to say, and why did it strike you? Yeah. What and why? Then we give you a chance to tell somebody else. And then we'll spend some time stirring ourselves before God. Okay. Thank you.